You're listening to Underground History, a collaboration between Jefferson Public Radio and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and each episode we take a deep dive into little-known aspects of the history in our region and beyond. And today we are going beyond the veil, recording live on Halloween, my favorite day, and we're going to be talking about the material culture of spooky season. My guests are Marion Held, curator of the Devilish Little Things Museum in Vancouver, Washington, and Tina Roussat, retired curator for the Southern Oregon Historical Society and Baroness of Darkwing Manor, one of our region's most infamous haunted houses. Ladies, welcome to the show. Do we have both of you here?
Yes, you do. This is Tina.
Okay, hi, Tina. I think we might be having trouble getting Marion on the line.
I'm right here.
Oh, Marion's here. Great, great. Welcome. Thank you both so much for joining me. I know you also love this spooky season like me. And I wanted to talk with both of you today because you're both really interested in the Halloween ephemera that is taking over this time of year. And I wanted to talk about where our fascination began with creepy keepsakes, devilish memorabilia, which is what I know that Marion specializes in. And so to start with you, Marion, I know your collection spans more than a century, and you have both Halloween and, you know, stuff to do with the devil as the namesake of your museum. But you didn't grow up in the U.S., and so I'm curious about your take on how uniquely American the way that we celebrate the holiday is and the craze of consumer culture that surrounds it.
Wow. Yeah, good morning. So yeah, I'm from Germany and we actually don't have Halloween. However, it has become a lot more popular over the time and a lot of people are now celebrating Halloween and dressing up and all this. But of course, we all have other occasions where we dress up. And in America, of course, it's like, you know, almost like an overkill and almost like Valentine's, you know, that's kind of a big consumer thing where, you know, it's all about money making and all that. But antique Halloween collectibles have been really popular, which, of course, I love.
Yes. So. And that's always much nicer than all the plastic stuff that's everywhere today.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, of course, there's a lot of kitsch out there now, too. You know, when you look at some of the stores where you see like pink and, you know, purple little skeletons and stuff, which is kind of
glitter,
you know, happy.
Yeah,
I mean, back in the day, things were a lot more scarier. And you know, to me, all this kind of holidays or Halloween, and you know, we have Walburgisnacht in Germany. Also, it's also about keeping bad things away. So you should dress up scary to keep bad things away. Really, that's the way I see it. And in Europe, of course, a lot of things have to do with the harvest, to protect your harvest. You want to have something scary to keep things, bad things away, you know, like the scarecrow on fields.
Yeah, so the scare is more outwardly directed. And Tina, I want to bring you in here, too, because you collect Victorian mourning jewelry and memorabilia, and these are items that were that might be considered kind of spooky today, but historically people had a different relationship with. And I was wondering how you thought, as somebody who did grow up in America with all the, you know, the consumerism and stuff surrounding Halloween, how you think that people relate differently to, you know, Halloween stuff versus some of this stuff historically that was had a different role in people's lives, but still kind of evokes kind of the macabre.
Well, it certainly is a distinction between people who collect Halloween ephemera and mourning items. And a lot of people do find the mourning items creepy, although the Victorians, of course, did not. They were very sentimental people. And these were keepsakes for the loved ones that had passed. And, you know, you think back on it, no one had cameras back in their homes in those days. So if you had a post-mortem photograph of a deceased child or something, that was the only memento that you had. And it was very precious to you, whereas the Halloween ephemera is more party-oriented and people telling fortunes and trying to figure out who their future husband or wife is going to be and just having a good time. So they're two, I would say, not really related items until recently when people began starting to collect the mourning items. And, yeah, that's considered still quite macabre.
Yeah. Yeah, there seems to be a rise in like oddities. And I mean, I definitely have always been interested in that stuff as well. But, you know, now it is getting more blurred, the lines between like the oddities and the antiques and collectibles and the really kitsch stuff. So, you know, I think both of you have probably seen this over the span of your career. So I'm not sure if whoever wants to jump in, go ahead and jump in and speak to that.
Yeah, well, I think people, you go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
You know, people just like to collect something, and I think it's really great. And I think as some of us older people, it's really part of our job to encourage young people to start collecting, because if they don't, everything is going to be lost. So if more people are collecting, you know, what you do or I do, and that's totally okay, because as long as people take care of it and pass it on to the next generations, and yeah, oddities have become more popular, and you know, it's kind of nice that people are out there expressing themselves and are maybe not too afraid to collect things that some other people might think is creepy.
Well, I think it's good that people are collecting things, but also you can't collect everything or you'll put the archaeologists out of a job. We still have to find the broken things that are thrown away. you're listening to Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and we are peak spooky season talking about the material culture of Halloween. So, Marian, you brought up the idea of like costumes being used to scare things away. And I remember, well, you know, every once in a while you see an old photo circulating with like a kid with like a burlap sack on their head or a really crude mask, and they are terrifying. But now, you know, there are every type of costume you could want, from like super cheap to really fancy. And we used to have to make our costumes ourselves. So what do you think that costumes, like how that relationship has changed with the season?
Well, I think over time, you know, people used to be more into the simplicity and that maybe came across more scary. But nowadays, you know, all the young people, they like to dress up sexy. And it kind of takes away a little bit the fun for Halloween. And, you know, so I think people also got really into the Krampus character from Europe and Austria, you know, like, you know, the furry guy. And he makes a lot of noise and scares the children. Because I think people kind of miss the more scary factor of the costumes.
Yeah, and you all know, those sexy costumes aren't doing their job of scaring away the bad things for the harvest. So.
Right. Those sexy things can be kind of scary too, you know. Yeah. I mean, of course, I worked in the special creature effects business in Hollywood for a long time on movies like Hellboy and Predators and Underworld and stuff like that, and we of course had like the most amazing Halloween parties where people went all out on costumes. You know, I always had prosthetic makeups on, or we had animatronic parts on our costumes. And that is just, I mean, if you don't live there and work in it, you'll never see it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, living in the Portland area now, of course, we don't have that. But so costumes can be still awesome if you're in the right circle of people.
Yeah, and we are in Ashland are lucky enough to have the big children's parade that happens this afternoon, and I always look forward to seeing all the amazing costumes. But so, Tina, one thing I wanted to ask you too is, so I remember as a kid, the plastic pumpkin for getting your candy is like the iconic Halloween like artifact of my childhood. But were there other like signifiers of the season or Samhain early on that you know of, that some of the imagery or items that people would have made or used to celebrate, you know, the season?
Well, I don't think Samhain really came into the picture until the counterculture and the polytheism came back in again. I had never heard of Samhain when I was a little girl. But yes, the jack-o'-lantern really is the trademark of Halloween, and it has been that way since about 1907. Local historian Ben Truey has done a lot of research on that. The jack-o'-lantern was adopted from, according to different sources, either the Irish legend of Jack, who was thrown out of heaven and hell, and the devil gave him an ember to light his way, and he carved a turnip and put the ember inside, and that became his jack-o'-lantern. But commercialization, of course, changed a lot of that. Things were homemade at one time, and in about 1907, I think it was, Denison paper, crepe paper company put out their one of their bogey books, which was a new way to celebrate Halloween, how to make costumes out of crepe paper, which sounds unfortunate with all the candles running around.
Oh, yeah. But
it was about in the 1930s that the American commercial costume companies came into being with Ben Cooper and Halco and those sorts. And I think that's when we started seeing a lot of the mass-manufactured plastic things. And then in the 1950s, of course, television coming into our homes. And we had new heroes and you know, new culture icons to emulate. So you see things like Davy Crockett and Cinderella and that sort of thing coming in, kind of usurping the old traditional skeleton witch and black cat.
Yeah, the old standards. So,
yeah,
Marianne, in your museum collections, when you have visitors come to the museum, because you have kind of a historical approach to looking at a lot of these things over time and in a different context, like ashtrays to art and stuff. So, how do you usually what kind of feedback do you get from the visitors that come there that maybe? Would have a different idea when they leave than they did when they go in to look at all the spooky devil stuff or Halloween stuff there?
Well, you know, my collection is really inspired by old folk tales, fairy tales, and Halloween and Day of the Dead and all those things. And so my collection is really more I call it mainly European whimsical novelty things. And, you know, I always say, you know, the devil really isn't the bad guy because he's in hell and punishes bad people. Doesn't make him evil, you know, he just has a crappy job. And the only evil out there are people doing bad things who will go to hell when that time comes. You know, of course, just an imaginary character. And the devil and Krampus and all that, in my opinion, are really more of an inspiration to be a good person, you know. If you don't want to go to hell or if you don't want to deal with the devil or if you don't want to go to prison, just be a good person. Don't do anything that will get you to any of those places. But,
yeah.
you know, it's really just more whimsical approach, and there's a lot more to talk about this, you know, and more than we have time here.
Yeah, but I know. We'll have you back on more.
Yeah. I love to talk about the collection because I like to open people's horizon on who this character really is.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, he's not the bad guy. Maybe a little mischievous or a little rascal, but not evil. You know, evil are only people.
And then, Tina, just in like 30 seconds, you know, you always also had visitors come to your very beloved haunted house for many years. So what, you know, what was the reward for you of offering that attraction to the community?
Hearing people scream.
That mine were in there.
No, you know, actually what it was I had every year over 100 volunteers, and these people would come, you know, young, old, in between, come and work their tails off for me for, you know, 2 months ahead of time and then breaking down afterwards. And they would come and they would thank me when it was over. And hearing back from those people now, like saying that's the best memory I ever had of Halloween, has been really gratifying.
Oh, man, I wish I had a chance to volunteer. I always meant to. But I did love to go to them as a consumer, I guess, as a visitor. Well, that wraps up this round of Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I could talk to you two ladies all day about this, but we have to go. We all have fun things to do today. Be safe out there tonight, guys and ghouls. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. Our show producers are Natalie Golay and Charlie Zimmerman. You can find this episode and many more at jeffexchange.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you. Happy Halloween. Bye.